Getting ready to welcome a tiny new human into your life can be very exciting. It also requires planning of all kinds. As expecting parents begin adding up the costs of diapers and daycare, it's natural to begin to wonder how much this whole thing is going to cost anyway. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, we visit with the Cash Money crew about preparing for the financial cost of parenting. They'll crunch the numbers and let you know what's in store. We'll also visit with a new mom-to-be about her thoughts on the subject. That's coming up after this news. Stay tuned. They're so tiny and adorable, and they don't take up much space at all. How much could it possibly cost to house, feed, clothe, and educate them? Well, we all know that the answer is a lot, especially if you actually purchased every must-have baby item on the market. Never mind that these babies grow up to be kids and then teenagers who need to go to school and get new outfits. They might even want to go to college. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and the Cash Money crew is here to help our listeners manage the potentially overwhelming prospect of paying for parenthood. Let's start by letting today's guests introduce themselves.
Hi, Gina. I'm Sandy Weaver. I'm a CPA certified financial planner with Financial Security Advisors.
Good morning, Gina. Alex Petrovic with Petrovic Financial Services.
Hi, I'm Lucas Butchell with KHC Wealth Management.
And they all represent the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. Okay, Cash Money crew, this is a big topic. So before we get into it, I think it would be helpful to acknowledge that not all parents spend the same amount of money, and they don't all spend it on the same things. What one parent deems necessary, another might consider frivolous, and different kids have different needs and requirements of their own. So how will we be dealing with the variety of parenting philosophies out there as we consider how much it costs to raise a kid?
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. Is it really does vary, and I think we've got some averages and can kind of talk about some of the trends. But I think big picture, it's going to be a personal thing, and that everybody needs to kind of take a look at their own specific situation and kind of outline what they're expecting and do some planning beforehand before the day actually comes.
You mentioned the statistics, so let's go ahead and look at the statistics. Do we have numbers for how much the average American family spends on raising a child?
Yes. Well, the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, a child born in 2012 to a middle-income family would cost them on an average of $241,000 by the time they're age 18.
So rounding up, that is $13,400 a year. I don't think most people feel like they've got $13,400 a year just lying around waiting to be spent. And yet people have babies. They do raise children. It's possible. I know it because they do it.
Yes, they do it, and you make do. And that's why we're here today, is to talk about some of the strategies that maybe can make that easier. But babies do cost money. There's no way around it. And as my father would say, if you wait till you have the money to have a family, you probably won't have a family.
Well, and another question about that statistic you shared, is the money distributed equally throughout those 18 years, or do expenses tend to be greater or lesser as for infants, maybe as compared to grade school kids?
You know, I have two children. My experience would say that they're kind of expensive early on, and then they get cheaper. And if it's a female, they get more expensive forever.
Interesting. What's your perspective, Sandy?
That's pretty much on the mark. Daycare for younger children, particularly infants, is much higher. There are racial requirements in the states. And then, yeah, they do seem to, you know, get a little bit less expensive in the middle years. And then teenage years, they start wanting things. And some parents, you know, it goes back to your first question about there are different ways to deal with these things. Some parents encourage children to have a job and to fund some of their own material wants. And other parents, you know, put it out there.
And you mentioned that when they're teenagers, they start wanting things. Maybe my memory is not serving well, but is that really, people don't start really like demanding things until they're teenagers?
It's probably younger now with the media that we have. They reach down, and McDonald's Happy Meal is a good example.
Well, there's so much that expecting new parents don't know until the kid arrives. What's the argument in favor of making a real attempt to plan this stuff out nonetheless?
Well, I think the big thing is the process of going through your expenses and identifying kind of what you're spending today. It gives you an idea of kind of what the fixed costs are and where areas you're going to have some wiggle room, because inevitably there's going to be some trading between expenses. So when if you're dealing with the same amount of income, if you've got diapers and formula and daycare to pay for, that means something else is going to have to be given up. So you kind of have a good idea of knowing where to start if you've kind of gone through the process beforehand and kind of looked at where your money's going today.
There's a term that I've heard. It's DINK. Is that a term you're familiar with?
It is not.
Double income, no kids. So DINKs, they go to brunch and things like that. What are some of the examples of things that a DINK might trade in upon becoming no longer a DINK?
You hit it right on the head. Is going out to eat is a big one that can cost a significant amount of money. It's such a more of a production to go out to eat when you have a child, and it's not near as much fun, in my opinion. So you tend to eat more meals in, which can be much less expensive. And at least for me personally, going out to entertainment, either for drinks or going out to concerts, those type of things, just dramatically went lower when we started having children.
What are some of the steps you recommend just early on when you're planning really abstractly before the child has arrived? Simple things that people can do to make their lives and possibly even their kids' lives easier once those children do arrive, do show up?
On a high level, I think it's talking about who's going to stay home. Are we going to where the daycare is going to be, what school district you might want to live in. Just real kind of high-level things that you might want to be thinking about a year or two before.
What are some of the factors people should consider in figuring that out?
Well, school is inevitably going to come, and daycare is going to come very quickly, even if you have someone stay home. So I think you need to be thinking about those way, way forward, and you where you want to live. I have a grandson that entering kindergarten this year, and the school that my son and daughter-in-law moved to, or the district, there was a fight here up to the very last minute. Would they go to this grade school or this one, because the boundaries are shifting? This is over in Shawnee Mission. And so you never know. And so you can't plan everything. You can try, but some things are out of your control, but certainly there are things that are in your control that you need to take advantage of.
And Sandy, Alex mentioned thinking about whether maybe somebody's going to stay home. That decision, it seems like, would be its own complex financial decision and emotional decision.
Oh, yeah. And you need to coordinate that with your daycare choices. Daycare can be full-time, part-time. It could be, in a center. It could be in your home. You could home share with another child in the area. Or maybe you have relatives help you. But it's all predicated on whether you're going to be, or your spouse is going to be full-time, part-time. And that may mean that you want to negotiate with your employer, perhaps. Maybe you want to go part-time. Maybe you want to do 3 days a week or 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week. Or maybe it's your significant other or spouse that wants to consider that. And you want to negotiate well before baby comes, because you want to know what you're going to be able to work out with your employer.
And do you, in making those decisions, do you consider just what each person is earning right now? Or do you look maybe further down the road and see maybe potential for raises and things like that?
Yes, you want to look at your career path. If you decide, or your spouse decides, to step out 4 or 5 years, and let's say you're in IT, technology, computers, that could really hurt a career like that because it moves so quickly. Whereas if you're more of in a healthcare field, perhaps that doesn't stunt the earning capacity growth so much there. And the other thing, let's face it, divorce is pretty high. So I would not want to I would not want to put myself in a position where if something bad that I could never think happened, then that you can hardly get back up on your feet and have a decent earning capacity to make your own way in this world.
Well, that is a really interesting perspective. And it does bring up also the issue that not everybody is embarking on this as part of a partnership. There are people who are
embarking on this journey solo, going on the ride alone, and who are very likely as single people to have to continue working. Is there advice, Lucas, that you might give to single parents?
Yeah, I think the biggest decision with the single parent is going to be daycare and childcare. So starting early in that area and really looking at all of your options. So Sandy kind of rattled off several there. You know, if you've got relatives in town that can help even a couple days a week, that can really help defray some of the costs there. If there's other people in your community that are in a similar position, if you can work part-time and effectively trade childcare, that's another way to effectively trade services of child rearing for somebody else instead of having to pay cash. And then going through the thing about childcare that I've experienced is if you wait until you're getting close, it creates a lot of pressure and stress. And then people don't make good financial decisions a lot of times when you have those factors in place, is short on time. And
they sometimes don't get along with each other under stress either.
Exactly. And so I think that's something is, if you're, especially if you're going to be a single parent, is starting that process and really researching the options and trying to figure out creative ways of doing it as inexpensively as possible.
Well, in the spirit of first things first, how much does it cost just to give birth, just to bring this new life into the world? I'm under the impression that this can vary dramatically depending on how things play out in labor and delivery.
It's about, this is just a national figure, about $9,500, $10,000 for normal delivery, about $12,500 for cesarean.
Wow. So how, do people, with that range of costs too, do people go into it? Should they plan for the worst-case scenario?
Well, but also you have to start with your insurance coverage, if in fact you have it. And most places now you can't be denied insurance under the new Affordable Health Care Act. But previously, it would be depend on whether you had health insurance. And some coverage is very good and some is kind of average. So that's where you're going to start first off. If you have no insurance, then you can often negotiate with both your pediatricians, your doctors, and facilities. So you need to be thinking in those terms. But that's the numbers that we saw, too.
People should think that they can negotiate these costs?
If you don't have insurance, you can. The people will talk to you because they want to collect. And the negotiating fees from doctors and hospitals is done.
Wow, I had no idea. Just that those were negotiable costs. Well, and a growing trend is home births, birthing centers. Are those costs essentially equivalent, or are they higher, lower?
My understanding is they're going to be a bit cheaper because you don't have the associated costs with running a big institution in that.
Well, on today's Central Standard, we're talking about the financial planning that goes into having a baby. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I've been chatting with the Cash Money Crew, but we have another guest in the studio who is a living, breathing case study in planning for having a baby. I'd like to welcome Pamela Spencer de la Fuente to the conversation. And Pamela, in case you have any friends out there who have not already heard your news, I don't want to be the one to share it, so...
Hi, everybody. If you didn't already know, if you missed my Facebook announcement... I am having a baby boy. He's due November 19th, hopefully not too much sooner than that.
Well, congratulations, Pamela.
Thank you.
And how are you doing listening to this conversation so far? Were those numbers intimidating?
That was really scary. When they said $200,000 and $13,000 a year, I thought, oh, my God. But they're right, because it's just like someone said once to me, if there's no good time financially to get married, and I think it's the same with having a baby, there's no good time to have a baby. So it's just kind of like, if you're ready enough, you just have to go for it.
Well, I'm about to get much nosier about this than I normally would be, and I apologize for that. But when did you and your partner begin talking about how the bank account was going to grow with the family?
Before we started trying to have a baby, we thought, we were talking about being dink, and when you said that, I laughed because my sister-in-law, I had heard her use that term. And
about you?
No, about herself. She said, I wish I had a little bit more time to be dink, dual income, no kids. And I thought to myself back then, it is nice to just, like last year, my husband and I, we went to Europe for 2 weeks. That was great. And that was one of the things that we wanted to do before we had a baby. So we did that, and we do enjoy going out to dinner. And, you know, sometimes on Thursday night we might go for a walk and go to the drink special at the local bar. So I know that those are things that we'll definitely be trading in.
And you're currently working, and that's full-time?
Yes, full-time.
Do you plan to continue?
Yes. I don't have a choice.
So that was probably a quick conversation then?
Yes, very quick. What we talked about more was trying to figure out how long I could be out. So some people take 6 weeks paid, 6 weeks unpaid. What I'm going to do is take 6 weeks paid and then 2 weeks vacation.
Well, so that's a total of 8 weeks at home. And then what's your plan from there? Do you have one or still figuring that out? You're still pretty early on.
Well, we have a plan. My husband is going to take 1 week paid vacation after I go back to work. And then hopefully my mother-in-law, if she's listening, I hope you remember that you said that you would do this for us. She said she would keep the baby for a week. And then after that, he's going to daycare.
I'm guessing there's a lot going on for you right now, and having a baby is about so much more than money. Do you feel like you're managing to talk enough about the financial piece of the picture without allowing it to take over?
Not after this show.
Oh, no.
Well, because for me, there's so many little things to think about in the beginning. And I know there's so many things that people say, you don't really need that much. But I was just, the other day, I was shopping in Costco, and I just happened to look. They had this aisle that had baby things in them, and there was a crib that was $500 and a changing table that was $300. And I was like, those are only two things, and that's almost $1,000 right there. So it's just some of the baby things, it just boggles my mind. The other day, I was at a cookout, one of my neighbors, and they have two little kids, and I was looking around their house, and it's full of baby stuff, and I said, every time I look up, I feel like there's something else that you need to buy. How do you do it? How do people afford it? And the husband said, you just save a lot of money. And I was thinking, I don't know how we could ever save this much. But
well, you know, it's interesting you should mention that. This morning I did a Google search for things you don't need to buy when you're having a baby. And before I got anywhere near the end of that sentence, Google finished it for me, which indicates to me that that is a question a lot of people are out there asking. And I turned up several, like, top 10 lists of things you don't really need. So it sounds like you're not the only one out there looking around asking yourself that question. Have you found any resources or advice, people you really trust who can give you some guidance on, well, yeah, this would be nice to have, but you don't really need it, whereas this thing over here, pretty important?
What I have heard a lot of people say is what they need is somewhere to sleep, whether it's a crib or a bassinet or a pack and play. They need somewhere to sleep. They need clean clothes, whether they're new or used. And then they just need you to love them. A lot of people say a rocking chair is good to have. And someone said one of those vibrating chairs is good. And somebody I work with said pretty much that's it. That's all you need in the beginning. So I hope that's true.
Well, even within one household, there can be more than one perspective when it comes to what is most important and where the focus should be. Have you and your husband approached this financial question in the same way and with the same sense of urgency?
It's funny. My husband, when I told him that I was going to be on this show, he said, why do they want you to be on it? Because he was the one when we decided we were going to have a baby, and when we found out that I was pregnant, he was the one who, he had always said, the minute that we find out that you're pregnant, we're going to start a savings fund. And so my husband, and he wanted to buy Dave Ramsey's book, and he did buy it, and he wants to go by that philosophy, and I'm like, just slow down.
Could you explain what you mean by that philosophy, Dave Ramsey's book, in case people don't know?
I didn't read it. It's something to do with, I think you put all your money in an envelope. I don't know. This is my husband's deal. But one big thing he wants to do is start this college savings plan. And for me, I went to public schools. I got scholarships. I got loans. I paid them off. So my parents helped me a little bit. But, you know, I worked hard. I wanted to go to college, and I made it happen. So I think, hey, that's good enough for me. It's good enough for my kid. And my husband is like, no, don't you want to do more for our son than that? So he's been researching what's better, 529 or college savings plan. So that's one of the things that he told me this morning. He was like, don't forget that. We got to do that.
Well, has pregnancy itself brought any unexpected costs?
Every time I look up, there's a new bill. And luckily, you know, I'm lucky enough to have insurance through work. So it's not as bad as it could be. But I can't imagine if I didn't, because every time you go to the doctor, they want to do some kind of test. And that costs money. And if you get ultrasounds, they're really expensive. So there are a lot of things. And then the last time I went to the doctor in, I guess, June, they gave me a note that said, okay, this is how much your birth is going to cost just on the surface. So you need to pay this much by August. And I'm not even due until November.
Wow. So they're having you prepay your birth?
Well, part of it. And they said, well, this doesn't even include any of the anesthetic or any of that stuff. So you'll be getting bills. They told me you'll be getting bills from us for months.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I got married, everyone had advice to give, whether I asked for it or not. And I imagine pregnancy is probably like that and then some. Have you gotten unsolicited financial advice from people who see you're pregnant and want to share their wisdom?
A little bit. Most of the financial advice is, you know, start saving for college. But then I hear some people say, well, who knows if college is going to be a thing in 18 years? So I do hear that. And then I hear a lot of people saying, don't waste a lot of money on a bunch of baby stuff because they grow out of it so quickly. And I appreciate things like that, because I always want to hear people to say, you won't need to spend as much money, versus people who tell me that I'm going to be spending $13,000.
Well, and you have been listening to this whole conversation. Is there anything you want to ask our Cash Money crew?
Well, I just want to continue to hear what they have to say, because I wouldn't have even thought to ask, you know, probably because I didn't want to know how much babies cost. Just to think, I mean, I wouldn't have even thought to ask that question, like how much you spend in a year. And then I always think about what some of my friends who have older kids, even that, when they're not in daycare anymore, when they're in school, sports cost money, and school, a lot of times, even in kindergarten, they have to pay for supplies and books, and that costs a lot of money. So it's mind-boggling.
Well, yeah, and these numbers could be daunting if you let them be, and we hope that this show has not totally scared you so far. Is there anything that you're maybe going to keep in mind to keep this all in perspective? And if you need some help with that, maybe we'll ask our Cash Money crew for some advice for you.
Well, someone said, you know, if you wait until you have all the money, then you'll never have a family. And so I just have to keep reminding myself. And then someone else said, you know, people, I think it was Eugenia, said people have babies every day. And that's what I have to remind myself when I start to worry about money. I think people do this. Single people do it on their own. At least I have a husband that is helping me, so I can do this somehow.
Well, for whatever it's worth, every financial milestone I've made has seemed impossible to me. And I look around and say, people do it. Why not me? I don't know that that's great financial planning. Well, Pamela Spencer de la Fuente, thanks so much for your time. It's been really great having you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And Cash Money crew, what did you learn from Pamela? Sandy, I've noticed you being very enthusiastic.
I really love your husband. I think he's got such a great attitude with the 529 and researching things. I like, you know, the Dave Ramsey approach, not going into debt, you know, right away about these things.
Explain what a 529 is.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a savings plan with tax advantages for college. And it doesn't hurt you so bad when you're going, if they would go for student loans like you did, versus if you put the money in an account in their name. But I do think I like your attitude that you want to economize where you can. You know, you can borrow baby furniture from relatives. You can always get used clothing from thrift shops. There are some things you can't skimp on, like buying life insurance. You know, if something would happen to you, you know, you still need enough money as a family unit to raise that child.
Talk a little bit more about the insurance piece of it.
Well, disability insurance and life insurance, you know, at once baby comes, you can't you really need to look at that seriously, because if something happens to one of you, you know, what you alluded to earlier, being a single parent is really a tough row to hoe. So, you know, those two types of insurance, you can't really go without once baby comes, because they will help mitigate the loss of having that second wage earner. Even if one of you stays home, if one of you dies, you're still then going to be in the position of needing full-time daycare. You know, so you'll need extra money if something happens.
And Lucas and Alex, what have you been hearing as you listen to Pamela's story? Anything you really want to draw out? I want to give each of you an opportunity.
Well, two things, I think. Number one is social pressure, you know. You got to resist some social pressure. It's no different than, you know, when your kids go to grade school or high school, what everybody else is doing or everybody else is wearing and that. You just got to be realistic and know that, you know, what you're doing is okay. And the other thing for hope, my grandparents came here from Europe in around 1900. And they had 10 children. They had no 529s. They had no, you know, savings plan at work. They didn't get leave, you know, and all 10 of them survived. Well, actually, it was all 20 of them survived.
Wow. All 20 of them.
Yeah, they were each the youngest of 10.
Wow. And what about you, Lucas?
I'm really encouraged, and I think you're doing the exact right things. You're thinking through what are the necessities, how is our life going to change. Your husband, to Sandy's point, is really being thoughtful even further down the road, not just the immediate, but also further down the road, which I think is all great. So I think the key thing I'd say for you, Pamela, and also for the listeners out there is the piece you said about thinking about the things we don't need. And when you kind of listed off the essentials and thinking about a way to acquire those that you don't have to pay retail for is a great way to get started at a very low price.
Well, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. We're talking to the Cash Money Crew about how to financially prepare for having a baby. And we'll want to hear from you when we get back. If you are parents who have done this or are in the process of doing it, we want to find out what advice you have, what you learned that you wish someone had told you. 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman and we are talking about financial planning before you have a baby. And we'd love to hear from those of you out there who have your own advice and lessons, perhaps learned the hard way, though we hope not. Share those at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And I'm here with the Cash Money Crew. I'm going to let them reintroduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Sandy Weaver, CPA, Certified Financial Planner with Financial Security Advisors.
Yeah, Alex Petrovic, Petrovic Financial, CFP as well.
I'm Lucas Butchell. I'm a Certified Financial Planner with KHC Wealth Management.
And they're all here from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. We've got a few things that we've touched on a little bit that I'd really like to unpack while we're waiting to hear from some of our listeners. One of those is the daycare piece of it. What are some of the... When you think about daycare going into perhaps having a first baby, how do you even begin to find what your options are and whether you've really looked into all the options?
There are a lot of options. So starting early and doing some basic research, I find most folks start with family and friends, and that's a great place to start to kind of find out what's out there, what people are doing. A nice benefit there is it also can be an opportunity to get some referrals either to specific child care providers or connections to people that have friends that are doing this. So that's a great place to start.
Any sense of how much it basically – what are the average costs in our area for daycare?
I will say there's a wide range. I pulled some numbers together from a state average standpoint. In Kansas, about $895 a month for a daycare center. In an in-home setting, it's a little bit cheaper at $625. In Missouri, the averages were a little bit lower at $730 a month for a center and $525 a month for in-home care.
I think those are good numbers. Our daughter is going to have a baby in August, and she works downtown. And she is going to work. They're both going to work. And they found this daycare that they were really interested in, and they really met all their needs, but it had a one-year waiting list already. So get started early, and you could sign up before you're, I guess mom's pregnant. can always resign, you know, but still. And for her, it was very convenient to where she, you know, worked. So a lot of things go into that where, you know, and then secondly, don't forget that most of them, you know, close at 6 o'clock. So you got to be thinking, you know, all this ahead. And, you know, young people figure it out, but it's nice if you can, you know, have a running start, so to speak.
The closing at 6 o'clock thing is interesting because some people don't work the traditional 9-to-5 schedule. How do people who work sort of untraditional schedules deal with this daycare issue?
I guess they have family to help. That's a good question. I'm not sure I know that one.
I think the closing piece is typically at a center. If you can find an in-home care, you know, you're negotiating with an individual person who may be able to work with you in terms of a pickup time or a drop-off time. And Alex hit the other one on the head, is a lot of people depend on family or friends to help them out in those kind of off hours or unusual hours.
So I feel like I'm hearing that living kind of near family, your extended family, can actually be a pretty significant cost-reducing thing.
Boy, absolutely. I mean, it's got to add up. We're 1 mile from our other child that has two boys, 6 and 3. And they're, you know, of course, we love them. So they say, hey, we want to go to a movie, you know. Well, that saves them probably $50, you know, and we love it. But, yeah, having a family around is irreplaceable, unless, of course, you don't like your family.
Well, and, Sandy, we've mentioned earlier in the show one really simple thing that you can do to start wrapping your mind around this, which is developing like a pre-baby and post-baby budget, just comparing mm-hmm. how you're going to shift costs. Any other sort of simple things that aren't necessarily financial decisions, they're more financial planning tools?
I think that there are places where you can find solutions that don't cost money, and there are going to be issues that come up that are going to take money to solve. And so I think, at least till you get your feet on the ground the first year or two, that, you know, you take the low road and do things that don't cost money. If you can find a babysitting co-op running in your area, join. In my case, I was able to find a neighbor who took care of infants over on the Kansas side, and that worked out very well to cover that after 6 o'clock emergency type of thing. And so it's important to have a plan B, you know, in place for days when you're sick and you can't use a daycare center, those types of things.
Well, let's go ahead and hear from our listeners. Julie called in at 816-235-2888. She's calling from Olathe. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I just wanted to share that there are a lot of consignment sales that have popped up in a lot of convention centers and different large venues around the metro area, and it's a great way to get like new things for a fraction of the cost.
So you're recommending that there are a lot of things you need, but you don't necessarily need to get them all new.
Absolutely.
Some nervous new parents might feel really concerned about, like, sanitation and things like that. Is that something that has concerned you, or is that something that a concern that doesn't really plague you?
You know, I think that in my experience, all the clothes that I've gotten, you know, I've brought home, I've washed them. You know, they require them to be clean and in decent condition when they accept them to the sale anyways. So I think it hasn't been a big deal. I've gotten a jumperoo kind of bouncy seat plaything that, you know, retails right now in the stores for $100, and I paid $25 for it. Those kinds of things. And it was, you know, in the box, looked like new, but it just wasn't. So there are, I think, a lot of things that, you know, I'd rather spend a little elbow grease than a little bleach wipes and clean it myself and pay, you know, a quarter of the price than going and paying brand new off the shelf.
Well, thank you so much, Julie.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
And I feel like I kind of am hearing Julie also say that she's finding ways to save on the little things. What do you think about that? That maybe there are areas where you really can't skimp, but getting something secondhand that you're going to use for just a year or so?
Yep, absolutely right. My wife and I, we actually go to those exact same consignment sales that she's talking about. It's amazing how much different the costs are compared to going to the store and buying at retail. The other big thing is talk to family and friends that have had kids, because they probably have a basement full of stuff, some that they used, and like we were talking about with Pamela, some stuff that they barely got out of the box that the kid wasn't interested in or that they didn't really need. that's a great place to start, and you can get some hand-me-down things there, and the price is definitely right with those. That's typically free.
Yeah, we just, and I bring this example again, we just brought the bunk beds that I think they'll be used separately off of Craigslist. They were from Nebraska Furniture Mart. They were $1,800. We got them for $600. Again, though, it's that planning ahead of time so you don't get nervous and agitated, and then you just make a bad decision. So that's probably the keyest thing that we would all take away from here, is just think about these things ahead of time and list them.
Let's turn to Earl in Olathe. Hi, Earl.
Hello. Just listening to your program as I was driving. I'm by the side of the road now.
But, good.
I just want to say how important it is. We are grandparents now, but having raised our kids and watching my son and his wife raise our granddaughter, how important it is to have a support group if you're part of a church. I know you can, as a first-time parent especially, get really nervous about, you know, some of those social pressures. And if you have a support group of other people who are kind of going through that experience at the same time, as well as the opportunity to kind of share some of those items with each other. I don't think our kids really ever had anything new other than a car seat. I think it's really important to have a new and a safe car seat for the child. But otherwise, the clothes and the items that you need for a baby are very easy to trade around among others that are kind of going through the same experiences, and you can also share wisdom with each other and ideas. And I think that's really important. If you have family there, obviously that helps. But if you don't have family, if you can be a part of a church support group or others who are kind of going through the same experiences and share ideas as well as items with each other.
Thanks so much, Earl. It does help to have friends, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, talk to you soon.
And one thing, just to piggyback on that, a lot of the hospitals now will actually help hook you up with new moms groups. So that's an opportunity. Even if you have no, you know, church connection or other friend connection, if you're the first of your friend group to be having a child, there's opportunities even through the hospital just to connect you with people that are starting to embark on a new stage just like you are.
You know, I want to turn to another caller in a second, but there is kind of this interesting question that, as people might start doing this budgeting, maybe they aren't in a position, if they just look at the numbers flat out, they would come to the conclusion, wow, I'm in no position to do this right now. But that, you know, their financial strength could increase along through the course of the life of the child. And I have heard someone say, you know, perfect parents don't have kids. Kids make perfect parents. Is there some wisdom in that? Or is it really the case that you need to make sure you can do this? I mean, is there such a thing as someone not being able to afford to have a baby? That seems kind of sad and maybe even, I don't know, borderline like condemning.
Well, obviously, if it's a family or a mother that doesn't have a job or whatever, you know, and that seems to be going without saying that they should wait till they're employed. But I go back to my grandparents. I mean, if you're hardworking and a few breaks and community, you know, I think you can raise a child in this country still. I certainly like to think so.
It goes back to our guest, Pamela. She put herself through college virtually. We have clients who feel that it's their responsibility to pay for half of their child's college, but not all of them. And it's certainly doable that, you know, your teenager can work and be putting, you know, a few thousand dollars, a couple thousand dollars away every summertime for college down the road, and they can go after scholarships. And lots of times you build a better character in a person. You know, if your teenager or child wants a $100 pair of tennis shoes, if they have a second job at the corner grocery store to help, you know, buy those pair of shoes. There are lots of different answers.
All right. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with the Cash Money Crew about financial planning in anticipation of having a baby. And some people begin that planning significantly ahead of time, and it sounds like that's a pretty good idea. We'll get more into the specifics of what you might be planning in a second, but we've got Jeff from Kansas City, Missouri, who called 816-235-2888 to join this conversation. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Welcome to the show.
Hey,
I don't know if anybody chimed in on this, just a small thing, but my wife and I did cloth diapers for our first kid, and we just asked for them for his baby showers. So we didn't buy a single one, and we just wash them and take care of them. Now we have them for our next kid. So we've only bought maybe one pack of disposable diapers, and he's 2.5. So, you know, that's a good way to save quite a bit of money right there.
Jeff, that's amazing. Do you think, is there something to be said for, you know, on most things, you're going to invest either your time or your money in doing something. So maybe you're spending the time cleaning those diapers instead of spending the money on the disposable diapers.
Well, we invested in a nice washer and dryer, but you need that anyway when you have a house. But, yeah, you spend a little more time on them, but you're going to have them. And, you know, the savings comes out in the end. It's like buying kind of an energy efficient, you know, air conditioner and other stuff like that, you know. So,
was there a learning curve on you learning how to use those?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. And then once after you get used to it, it's no big deal, you know. Kind of get used to the smell and the right way to do it.
Sounds like... That's probably a conundrum no matter what kind of diapers you're using. Well, thanks for the call, Jeff.
Hey, have a good one.
And so Cash Money Crew, that's an interesting perspective, too, is that there are a lot of traditional ways of doing things that we reinvent the wheel and things go in cycles of how we think about them. There was a time when everyone was using cloth diapers, then disposable diapers came along. Now a lot of people are going back to that old idea.
Absolutely, and I think you know, the numbers piece is one element of that, and you know, the disposables are great for convenience, but in some level, I think the decisions like that are good, and the good thing is that people are thinking through it and they're figuring out what's best for their child, and then you know, obviously the financial piece comes into it when they're looking at the numbers and you know, looking at how much the big box of diapers costs at the store, but you know, I think. Clearly, they made the decision, Jeff and his spouse, and it's working out for them. So it's worth considering and figuring out what's best for you.
And Alex, before we get back to our callers, I do want to touch on some things we haven't really explored yet, like what kinds of savings accounts and investments can people make to help their kids later in life? Is that something that's a luxury for the few, or are there ways that even people who might not feel like they have a lot of wiggle room, things they can do anyway?
Well, you know... It's a trade-off from things that you've, unless you're well off, but certain things you can do, the savings plans at work, you know, where you can pay, they withhold money from your paycheck, and then you can pay child care expenses with tax-free money. We've talked about the 529s, which are college savings plans. There's also Coverdales, which are a little more limited, but apply for both secondary education as well as grade school and that. So those are a couple ideas. Of course, you daycare credits, some of it's you get a tax credit on it.
And we haven't talked about tax considerations in general. When you have a baby, does your taxing status change at that point,
yes,
having dependents?
You get an extra personal exemption, which is worth $3,950 to you. As Alex mentioned, you can defer, I think, up to $5,000 of your salary over into a flexible spending account for daycare, and so you don't have to pay tax on that $5,000. You might be able to qualify if your income is below, I think, $51,000 for that earned income tax credit, and then there's the child tax credit that you might, which is a dollar-for-dollar reduction in taxes. So there are several, you know, that you might be able to take advantage of. Plus saving for college in an education savings account or the 529. You can even use an UTMA. And I'm a firm believer in trying to rope in the grandparents to help you on the financial end. You know, a gift, a birthday gift or a Christmas gift into those accounts can be really helpful.
Do you think there's something to be said for some of these little – a lot of our callers have suggested ways of saving a little bit at a time, and maybe when you save a little bit by going to a consignment shop instead of getting something new, taking the remainder and
– Absolutely.
Piling that away.
Yeah, because it goes against saving where you can, because there are other places where you can't.
Well, let's go ahead and turn to another caller. We've got David in South Kansas City on the line. Hi, David.
Good morning, all. I would recommend trying to space your children out. We've had friends that have had, you know, babies, you know, within 1 or 2 years of each other. and that expense is just crippling to them a lot of times. We did something a little bit radical. We did it every 5 years. We've got three children, and we looked at it and said, what's our biggest possible expense? And it's, you know, schooling, whether it's a daycare or college. So we hope we'd get one out before the next one started. So I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, you only have that one expense at that time. You don't have that, you know, two or three expenses, you know, whether it's a diapers or formula or clothes that, you know, they're growing through every, you know, 3 months or whatever.
You know,
it just seemed to be a lot easier to take that hit.
David, you called this a radical approach. Do people respond to your spacing decision that way, thinking, you know,
Not really. Yeah, we just looked at it as radical because, you know, I mean, 5 years, essentially what you're having is three, you know, single children because, you know, they're grown to a point where, you know, they're getting to be, you know, more conscious of their own needs, you know, instead of just an infant where you've got three infants or two infants or however many that are totally dependent on you. You now have, you know, a toddler that, you know, is essentially an only child.
So
but 5 years.
This isn't like a net savings. This is more like at any given moment, your sense of how well you can manage the present situation is comfortable for you.
But I'm not sure it's not a net savings because you don't have to scrimp or save or do anything, you know, drastic. You don't, you know, shoot, we were still able to go out because we had one child. You know, where a lot of people have three children, so they are, you know, that's a huge hit.
And you provided yourself a babysitter.
That's exactly right.
Well, thanks so much for calling, David.
Thanks, bye.
So actually, like, the decisions about how you approach starting a family and maybe continuing to let that family grow can be very tied into these financial kinds of questions. We like to think of these as emotional decisions or just things that are motivated by something else. But is it possible to totally separate them?
No. And I'm impressed by some of the calls of people that are actually thinking of, you know, the process of having a family on a fairly, you know, high level level. And then down to the, you know, the nitty-gritty little details. But, boy, it comes back to, you know, what we're all about here, and that's planning. Whether it's it's how we're going to space out the kids. And in his instance, the first thing I thought of, well, he got two years, you know, of no diapers, you know. And then he had diapers for 3 years, and he had 2 years free. But planning, can't say it enough. Just writing this stuff down and thinking, okay, ahead of time as opposed to at the last minute.
And education is something that we probably should unpack just a little bit more before we go, because we spent a lot of time on how to pay for things like diapers. But really, there are a lot of different decisions people can make about education. And what's some basic advice about that, Sandy?
You probably want to take advantage of tax vehicles that we have in our tax code. You can save and avoid income taxes on the investment earnings if you use a 529 college savings plan or an education savings account, or even the Uniform Transfers to Minors Act, taxes at the child's rate, which is cheaper than yours.
One of the things that impacts folks here in the metro area is school districts and the accreditation of those schools, like we see over in Kansas City, Missouri. So thinking about where you're going to live and where you're going to send your kids to school. And if you're in a district that you're not comfortable with, then you go to private school. Private school is much more expensive. So thinking through that decision, which then drives, you know, where you live, that's a pretty important one.
Well, and let's see. There's a caller that I love to get to in just a second. We'll go and talk to Ezekiel in Kansas City. Ezekiel, quickly, tell us your story.
Well, we did the planning, and then we found out that we were going to have twins. So that kind of put a loop in kind of the whole situation, whether it be daycare or college or that kind of thing. So it was just another planning for the unplannable situation.
How did you handle that? Did your cost double, or are twins, I mean, is that really twice the cost of one?
Yeah, well, I've heard that the cost is also in the time and not only financial. So the first thing I did was I went into and talked to my boss. I says, there's a possibility that we're going to have twins. So that's kind of how we handled that. But yes, financially, it definitely doubles. But then you also think about the time that it takes. I've heard it's triple. So, but yeah, I went ahead and quit my job, and I stayed home for a few years. But that's kind of how we handled that situation.
And that is a decision a lot of people make. Any hidden costs in staying home?
We're pretty frugal, so we just kind of, my wife did a lot of Craigslist, you know, that type of thing. We put out the word to friends and family just to let them know that we needed help. So that was some sort of support mechanism, but, you know, they ended up being sick, so, you know, it was pretty detailed on how to handle them to get them to the next, you know, through the next milestone.
Well, Ezekiel, congratulations on pulling that off.
Thank you.
And good luck going forward. So that's a way of saying not everything can be planned for. A lot of surprises are still out there. And you are all three parents. So parting question, sum total, is it worth it?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
So no doubt there. Well, one of the few questions that can be answered with that much certainty.
Oh, I have to ask our children if they think we were up to it.
That's all the time we have for today's conversation about saving up for that first baby. I'd like to thank Lucas Butchell, Sandy Weaver, and Alex Petrovic, who visited us from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. They are our Cash Money crew. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you, Tina. If you'd like to listen back to today's conversation or any past shows on Central Standard, just go to kcur.org/Central Standard. Sign up for our podcast while you're there. Tomorrow, we'll explore the Wyandotte County Fair. What is the role of a county fair in today's society? And just who's judging those chickens, swine, and goats? We'll meet those people, so don't miss it. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date with Steve Kraske, coming right up next.